Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
You got no.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, high stakes poker co-host Kara Scott, who was Dennis Phillips' first victim this weekend at the NBC Heads Up Poker Championship. Also, Mike Johnson and Adam Schwartz, the two co-hosts of a very entertaining podcast called the 2 Plus 2 PokerCast. They'll be joining us later on here. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, is not with us today because he's on his way. I'm not sure if it's to Bay 101 in San Jose or to where they're playing the Shooting Stars Classic or to the Wynn Classic in Las Vegas. I don't know which one of them it is, but Dennis and I are here in the Harrah's Poker Room where 10 tables are full of people playing both cash games and tournaments to get ready for the circuit event that is now just a little over 3 weeks away. I'm Paul Harrah's alongside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips, who's just back from a pretty successful weekend in your inaugural shot at the NBC Heads Up Championships, where you made it all the way to the semifinals. Congratulations.
Absolutely. And I'm telling you, if you're not familiar with this, it's 64 people by invite only. There are maybe 7 or 10 total qualifiers, and the rest of them are invitation. To be invited was absolutely great. And then you look at the lineup and you go, was this really that good of a thing or not? It was an awesome lineup of people out there.
Well, we're going to talk to Kara about your first round match against her in a little while. We'll also talk about some of your other players there. But for people who are not familiar with the NBC Heads Up, what's the structure like? How long does each round take, et cetera?
Yeah, well, it depends. Chris Moneymaker in his first two rounds only had 10 hands dealt. He was all in on the third hand of the first round and all in on the seventh hand of it. So he's up and gone in 5 minutes on both of them. He won both of them, by the way.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, kind of the way that it can go. Or it can sit there for a couple of hours even. But the blind structure is so aggressive, and it's only 15-minute rounds, that the money's going to be in there fairly quickly.
You start with 20,000 in chips. What do the blinds start at?
Well, every level went up. It was 20,000 first level, 40,000 the second.
Because you get to keep the chips that you
correct,
won before.
Correct.
Yeah.
But the blind structure then goes up. I mean, they started out, like, I think it was only 100, 200 on it,
okay,
on that level. But the second level, you're starting at 300, 600.
Yep.
And it just keeps going up. So, and they skipped several levels in there.
Yeah, they want to make it a pretty fast structure.
If you lasted 2 hours, you were both short stacked.
So did you go into this with a particular strategy in mind? You and I talked with Colin Moshman last week, the guy who wrote the book. I know you took a look at the book and said you got some insight out of that. But did you go in there saying, here's what I'm going to do from my first hand?
I think that's absolutely a mistake most of the time, unless you have played a person so many times and are so familiar with them. You go in there and you take whatever the table gives you, be it the player, be it the cards, whatever. You have to be open-minded. You have to be willing to shift gears on this thing. If you go in there with a straightforward thing, I'm going to play this, 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 I think you're in trouble.
You can't say, I'm going to be hyper-aggressive in this thing. I'm going to be raising every hand, every chance I get.
Now, you do try to be aggressive on head-to-head. That's a common thing, and everybody is. But everybody out there, all 64 players, know that philosophy, and they're going to be aggressive. It kind of negates the profitability of it right there, if they're all 64 playing the same way.
How often would you say you're on the button, which in heads-up play means you're the small blind, so you're going to act first pre-flop.
Right.
How many times would you say you don't raise?
I probably was raising 60-70% of the time.
Yeah.
Very aggressive on it. Any kind of a hand at all, any kind of a read, any kind of a chip dominance, and I'm going to go after it and start raising.
All right, let's talk about your particular opponents as you went through there. First round, you went through Kara pretty quickly, and then you moved on to the guy who you told us last week you least wanted to face in this thing, a guy who has been fantastic at the NBC Heads
Absolutely.
Up, Chris Jesus Ferguson.
I think his record was 14-3 when he was going against me, or 15-3, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was definitely a favorite.
And by the
match.
Way, of all the poker players in the world, probably the least readable player.
And he works at it very hard. He works at his timing to make sure he doesn't give anything away there. He wears the hat. He wears the shades. He has his comfort zone, where he puts his hands and everything in the same position at all times.
Yeah.
Yes. Very, very difficult to
read.
Could
you pick up something on Jesus? Don't tell us what it was if the answer is yes. But
I did okay against him. I had some feel against him and everything like that. And a couple of the times when I thought I put him on a hand, he actually turned out to have that hand. So I feel a little more comfortable now playing him. Mm-hmm. But he's very difficult and an extremely good heads up.
How'd your match go with him?
Actually, and I'm glad this happened, he was somewhat card dead and I caught some decent cards.
So always a good thing to have happen.
Yeah, it makes it much easier.
Yeah.
Especially against a player like him.
Okay.
I probably caught the best cards against him of anybody I played out there.
All right, so then you get past Chris Ferguson, and in the third round you take on Eli Elezra, who everybody knows stakes poker.
Absolutely. Again, he may not have played that many of the tournaments and got the recognition there. He should, but he's one of the top players in the world. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And he's fearless.
A regular in Bobby's room with
Royal
and Phil Ivey and the rest of Jennifer Harmon and the rest of those folks.
Yeah. You know, you walk into Bobby's room, you see the stack of chips in front of him and the other guys. Yeah, he can play poker. No doubt about it.
Okay. What was your match like against him?
Again, it started out the first level or so, just kind of feeling each other out and that. He wasn't as aggressive as I thought he might be. And then I changed my game a little bit, and I became a little more aggressive and started pushing out a little heavier on it.
Now, I know Eli likes to talk a lot when he's playing. We
he
see
did.
That on high-stakes poker, and I've heard that from other players who played against him, that Eli's kind of a chatterbox at the table.
He is.
So you guys get into a conversation as you're playing here?
Absolutely. I try to get every one of them into a conversation on it. It helps out. Maybe it relaxes them, makes them feel a little more comfortable. It's good interaction for the TV. It makes me feel a little more comfortable. I like talking to the guys.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that sit there and they're so solemn. I even got Chris talking a lot to me.
No.
I absolutely did.
There's your headline for today, Jesus Speaks. All right, so you get past Eli. Was that a matter of outplaying him, or you caught cards, or what was it? You outplayed him. Okay.
Anyhow.
Let's go on to the next one, and this is an interesting one for you, only because of the enormous respect I know you have for Doyle Brunson.
Yeah.
What's that like to face him? First of all, I know the crowd is on Doyle's side.
Well, they should be. He's earned it. I have no problem with that at all. In fact, at one time during it, somebody from there said, "Sorry, Dennis, but you know, we're rooting for Doyle." And I turned around and said to him, "If I wasn't sitting at the table, I would be rooting for Doyle." So, you know, I have no problem with that.
Were you surprised Doyle played in this? Because he's had some big medical problems over the last couple of months, and I think he had said that he wasn't going to do anything until the World Series this summer.
Yeah, but that just speaks to the prestige of this. I mean, this is literally Andy Block. I was talking to him on that, and he said this is the one event you never miss other than the main event.
Mm-hmm.
You come to it every year because it is the best of the best. You've just got to play it. Doyle was there.
We're going to hear a little bit of one-on-one that Joe McGowan recorded with Doyle Brunson. While Dennis was playing, Joe had a digital recorder with him and was catching up with some of these players, and we'll play some of those for you in this hour. Since Joe's not here to talk about the experience of being a bystander, we'll hear a little bit of those one-on-one, and Doyle will be up first in a couple of minutes. Tell me about couple of hands that you played against Doyle, one in which I know that Doyle totally sucked out on you, and another one in which I'm told, or I read online, that you made a fantastic read on Doyle. First, about the one where he sucked out on you.
Well, the first one, he was getting a little short stack. I was being very aggressive. I'd won a few pots, decent-sized ones, by coming over the top of him, and I had him down to, let's see, we started that match, let me think for a second, 160,000 each on that thing.
Uh-huh.
I think I had him down to about 70,000 at this time on it.
So 250 to 70.
Right,
okay.
On that thing. He was actually first to act on it. He raised, and I called him. I had a 10-8 offsuit on it, but I was on the button. Wasn't a problem.
No, he was on the button.
He was on the button.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have no problem seeing a flop with that, especially if I got a dominance on the chips at this time, which I did have on that. Flop came out with came a king, 10, 8. Miracle flop for me.
Beautiful.
Right?
You flopped bottom two pair.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm sitting there trying to decide how I can extract some value from this and the whole bit on it. I checked. He shoved. Insta call by me, obviously, on the thing. He looked at me and kind of, well, I don't have a king. I said, well, I got very lucky. I got bottom two here on this thing. So he shrugged his shoulders and, you know, away we go.
What does he turn over?
Jacks.
Okay.
So he had pocket jacks. Very good move on his part, as long as I didn't have a king, and all likelihood I'm going to fold there.
Yep.
If I've got some sort of a draw with a 9-7 or whatever, I can't even call that.
Yep.
There's a decent amount because there's a preflop raise, gets him back up probably over around 100,000. So, I mean, it's a good move by him.
Okay, he needs another king or running cards to beat you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Turn cards a six.
pretty good for you?
Not a problem. Now, well, he has two jacks as outs. He has three kings and he has three sixes. He has eight outs on it. Mm-hmm. 16% chance to win the pot. I have an 84% chance. So when the turn or the river card comes and I throw my hands up and twirl the chair around, it was kind of obvious to everybody what happened. It was another six.
Yeah.
So he got six six on it.
Okay.
His two pair better than my two pair. He doubles up. I'm still a little ahead, but it's fairly close at this time.
All right.
He takes down a couple more pots. Now he is ahead. I'm down to approximately 120,000, I think.
All right.
He's sitting there at close to 200,000
okay.
on it. Well, and then we come to the other hand. Preflop, he raises again. I have a queen five. I call.
Okay.
I see the flop. Flop comes out there, a queen six and rag. I think it was a three. I was on the other end of it.
Uh-huh.
On it. All righty. I think about it for a second on this thing. I'm not going to bet out on this thing. Doyle shoves.
Mm-hmm.
Now stop and think for a minute. This is one of the best players in the world.
Yep.
What hand would he shove with right there?
Especially if he's got a little bit of a chip lead.
Oh, absolutely.
He's in the lead at this point,
right? He's in the lead.
Yeah.
He absolutely is. I am at risk if I call him.
Are you thinking to yourself, he can't have a great hand here? Because if he did have a great hand, even if he had a better queen than I do, he's going to try to extract value out of me?
I literally took probably 3 minutes there and ran through all of the range of hands in my head. There's no way in the world he pushes out there with ace, queen, king, queen, queen, jack, or even queen 10 probably, because he's going to try and extract some value if he has this kind of a hand.
Mm-hmm.
If he hit any kind of a set or something, obviously not a chance in the world he's going to do this. He
could have a queen with a middle card.
That was my worry.
That kicker.
The only two hands I put him on, which I would be in trouble, was if he had a queen 7 or a queen 8.
Uh-huh.
Other than that, I figured I was good. And knowing him, he could have had the 4-5 and had an open-ended straight
to
be shoving with it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember on the earlier hand, he had the jacks when the king came and he shoves. He could have had a smaller pair. He could easily have turned over nines or tens there, which didn't bother me on that.
Because the thinking is, it's hard to hit a flop.
Well, absolutely. You know.
And if you didn't hit the queen there, you're probably going to lay it down.
Absolutely.
But you did hit the queen.
I did hit the queen. And I thought about it and thought about it, and finally, this is heads up. This is a good chance I can get. In all likelihood, I have the better hand. If he has that queen 7, if he has that queen 8, well, then I shake his hand and go home.
Right.
And I called it. And he turned over a 7-6. He'd hit middle pair, was
mm-hmm.
it.
Yep.
He looked at me and he said, good call. So this one held up.
Yep.
So and then all of a sudden I'm back to a dominant chip lead. He's down below 100,000. The last hand was very standard on it. I had a ace-king. I had a monster hand. I raised. He smooth called it. Flop comes out there, king, queen of diamonds, and a 9 offsuit, another suit on that thing.
Yep.
We both get it in. He turns his cards over. I said, I think we're racing. We actually did it on the computer. It was 50.1 to 49.9.
Wow.
He had an 8-9 of diamonds, so he had the flush draw, plus he had a third pair on that thing. I had top pair with top kicker.
Uh-huh.
And it held up. End of match.
That was it.
Yeah.
Then you went on to play Annie Duke for the championship.
Yes.
I hear that Joe McGowan somehow got his hands on either an air horn or a truck horn and scared the crap out of Annie at some point. Is that true?
Yeah. It went off in the background. It did. Neither one of us was aware it was going to be there on it. So they did the truck horn about 4 or 5 times during her match, yes. And the first time it did wake her up, shall we say.
How long did your match against Annie last?
Actually, we went all the way up to 30,000, 15,000 blinds. And we only started with 300,000 apiece.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it got to be very, very bad. It was almost to a shove fest at this level.
Yeah.
So we went a long time. I went card dead on about the fourth level there, which hurt me and got her a good chip stack. We put it in one time when I had king, jack. She had ace, five. I caught the king, get my back up into it, and then she ground me right back down again. I was getting the deuce sevens and the three eights. It happens on it. And she played very, very well. Tough, tough opponent.
And she ended up going on to win the whole thing, beating Eric Seidel in the final.
Did.
So Annie gets $500,000. Eric Seidel gets $250,000. And Dennis and Scotty Wynn, who was knocked out by Eric in the semifinals, each get $125,000. And that's the story of the NBC Heads Up this weekend. You will get to see it on TV. Starting next month, Dennis has got a lot of TV time coming up. High Stakes Poker on the 21st, Poker After Dark that same week. NBC Heads Up coverage will start on Sunday, April 18th, and then it'll air 1 hour that day and then 2 hours in succeeding weeks after that. And we'll certainly keep you updated on all of those things. Dennis is also going to be appearing that month on the Windy City Poker Championship, which he taped in December, and it's a big TV spring for you.
Yeah, and the Heartland Tours also.
Heartland Poker Tour, so, yeah. Plus the NAPT coverage.
And a partridge in a pear tree. All right, there you go.
Just all over the place. Before we go to the break, let's hear a little bit from the poker coach, Joe McGowan, who, as I mentioned, got some one-on-one time with Doyle Brunson. Uh-huh. We'll call this 100 Seconds with Dolly. Roll it.
How have you been able to stay on top of the poker world in playing when the game, it seems to me, and you tell me if I'm wrong, the game is always adjusting and changing and different moves and different plays are created and then the squeeze play and this and that. How have you been able to stay on top for all these years?
That's just because you listen to these guys that are coming along now. I mean, the object of the game is to win the other guy's chips. And, you know, and that hadn't changed and never will change. So, I mean, if they think they're going to invent some new ways to do that, you know, that we didn't know 30 years ago, well, they'll have to show me.
I love that you're still on top. I think everybody does, too. What do you think about all the online play, you know, Doyle's Room and all the other rooms? I mean, I feel, of course, it's great for poker because it brings in new blood and new players. What do you think of all those types of players that are maybe a little younger and a little more aggressive? You know, do you play those guys differently because they are so aggressive, or do you just play it like you say and, you know, let the chips fall where they may?
The way your opponent plays dictates the way you play. So, you know, if a guy's over-aggressive, you know, what can you do about it? You just sit back and wait on him. And if a guy's passive, then you become the aggressor. That's the way it's always been. That's the way it'll always be. And I give the online players credit because they have played a lot of hands, and there is something to the online play that with all those sophisticated things they've got, the trackers and the all that stuff. I don't know about that. I play by the way I feel.
That is Doyle Brunson one-on-one with the poker coach Joe McGowan this weekend at the NBC Heads Up Championship. We'll hear from one of those aggressive young online players, Annette Oberstad, in another one-on-one interview later on this hour. In just a couple of moments, we'll talk with Kara Scott, the co-hostess of High Stakes Poker and Dennis's first victim this weekend at that NBC Heads Up Championship. By the way, if you want to be one of those hot young online players or hot older online players, you may want to visit our sponsor, PokerStars.net.
PokerStars.net is a place that I play, and it's unbelievable, the selection of games and what they have there on it. LAPT in Chile did get canceled because of the earthquake. Mm-hmm. They have so many other things going on right now. The San Remo one, if you want to qualify, you can go on the PokerStars.net and qualify for that one. The Scoop events are coming up, which is the spring championship of online poker. You can qualify for those there on it. The NAPT, the next event there at the Mohegan Sun, is coming up here in just a few weeks. And you can go on, again, free roll, get on it, qualify for it, go there, see what happens. At any given time, there's 200,000 to 300,000 people playing on PokerStars. It's unbelievable. Play there with the pros. You've got Peter Eastgate, you've got Chris Moneymaker, you've got Greg Raymer, you've got Joe Hashem. You've got a whole ton of them there with the new kid, Joe Cotta. I'm telling you what, guys, if you want to play poker, go to PokerStars.net.
And we'll be right back with more of The Final Table here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harrah's on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And our guest portion of the show today is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the group that is fighting for poker players like you and me everywhere in America. We told you a story last week about some home game players at a senior citizen's home who got raided by the cops. 20 guys have been playing for 5 years, doing nothing but having a little fun playing poker, and the cops busted them up. That's because of ridiculous state laws against home games in some places in this country. We're fighting for online players. We're fighting for casino players everywhere. The poker players are represented by the Poker Players Alliance, but they can only do it with your support. Go to the website, thepppa.org, and find out how you can become a member for just $20 and help our lobbying efforts in Washington and in state houses around the country and fight the legal battle in courthouses as well. The Poker Players Alliance, online at thepppa.org. That's thepppa.org.
Our guest today is Kara Scott, who, as you know, is the new co-host of High Stakes Poker. Kara's also been the host of Poker Nightlife, Sky Poker, European Poker Tour, High Stakes Backgammon, as well as a martial arts show called Now is the Time. As a poker pro, she's the only woman to cash in both the 2008 and 2009 WSOP main event, and she finished second last year in the Irish Open. This woman has cashed for over $500,000 now already, and she's not been playing that long. Let me tell you, she's doing well. This weekend, she was my opponent in the first round of the NBC Heads Up Champion, and afterwards, she agreed to come on the show with us today. Hey, Kara.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for the invite. I was the first victim of Dennis Phillips in the NBC, so I appreciate it.
And not an easy one by any means, let me tell you. You played very, very well.
Kara, we were talking earlier about Dennis's first experience this weekend. This was also your first shot at the NBC Heads Up. What was it like for you?
You know what? It was great, actually. I was pretty nervous, a little less nervous than the first time I did this sort of thing. I was on Poker After Dark a few months ago, so I felt a little bit more comfortable with the cameras and everything. But, you know, obviously still, it's a great field. It's a great tournament. I was so excited to have been invited. It was just, that kind of blew my mind, just being able to be there. Obviously, I wish I could have gone a little farther, but yeah, it was good.
Did you have a read on Dennis, or was he just lucky catching cards on you?
No, Dennis played really well, too. I thought it was pretty funny, actually. The whole, it seemed to me that, and I could be wrong here, but that people's idea of how a Dennis Phillips, Kara Scott heads-up match would go was going to be quite small pots, lots of limping, you know, fairly weak play, and it, that was not the case at all. I think there wasn't a single limped pot between us. So, yeah, it was good fun, and he's a good player.
Oh, it absolutely was. And anybody that doesn't give you credit, I'll talk to them. Just send them to me, okay? You played
well.
Well, you finished 104th in 2008 and then came back and cashed again this year in the World Series of Poker. You've done very, very well.
Yeah, 104th and then 130th or something like that.
Something like that, yeah, on it. So what are you going to do this year? Final table?
Well, that's the plan. Definitely the plan. I'm going to go win the Irish Open and then I'm going to final table the main event. That's, you know, why not? Aim high.
Yeah, life is simple. Just go ahead and do that. No problem.
Kara, we were talking before about how Dennis's shows on High Stakes Poker will be airing starting on March 21st, and then it'll be on those three episodes. You are in your first season there working the floor while Gabe is in the booth calling the action. You're sitting there watching every hand, right?
That's right, yeah. I was in my own little back room there watching what the guys were doing and listening to the table talk and just, you know, keeping an eye on what was happening at the table and taking some notes to hopefully when the guys came back to talk to me, I could ask them about specific hands and have everything kind of laid out for me.
What have you watched as a poker player that taught you something?
Wow. Watching poker at that level, it's kind of hard to, I think it's kind of hard to learn from it as like a regular level poker player because they're thinking at such a higher level than I would do in my own games and any of my opponents would do in my games as well. But it was definitely entertaining. And just watching the fearlessness, you know, when they knew that they had to pull the trigger, being able to pull the trigger, that's such a skill. That, you know, not having a big gap between what you know you should do and actually being able to do it. And that's what makes people such good high-stakes players.
Well, you bring up a very good point. I talked earlier about a hand that I played with Doyle and the range of hands I could put him on when I had the queen and went ahead and made the call against him. Against a poorer player, I probably would have folded that. I'm telling
right.
you, I had enough respect for Doyle to know the range of hands he would have made that call with.
Mm-hmm. Or shoved at that
shoved
point.
Or shoved at that
yeah,
time.
Yeah, because a lesser player probably shoves at that point because he's got, I have a queen, there's a queen on the board. I'm putting all my chips
yeah.
in. Doyle's not going to do that because he wants to extract value, as we talked before.
Honestly, knowing your opponent helps so much, and then Doyle's interview, he says you play what the table gives you and such, and we were both fairly aggressive on this thing. So he knew. If he had a hand, he could have trapped me probably on that one.
Yeah.
So, no, I had a lot of respect for him, and I was able to make that call because of the respect I had for him. So you made a very good point there.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, and that's really what separates, you know, the great poker players from those of us who are still really learning this game and being able to put those reads into action. And, you know, being able to back your understanding of your opponent is so important, and it's not as easy as it sounds.
Oh, no. Doyle's capable of playing almost any two cards at any given time.
Yeah, true.
So. You know, one of the things that makes high-stakes poker great is the fact that the players at the table are talking so much. And, in fact, there was one point this week where correct me if I'm wrong, Kara, but I think at one point somebody started talking about EV, and Phil Ivey, arguably the greatest player in the world, said, what is EV? And somebody had to say, oh, it's expected value. Did I hear that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was kidding. I got to be honest.
I think so, too. but tell us about, and I know you talked to both participants in this later on, the prop bet between Phil and Durr, Tom Dwan, about Ivy has to go vegetarian for a year. You talked to them immediately afterwards. What was the dynamic like on that?
Well, I don't know if it's the bet still in force or if he's actually bought out yet, because it did look like it was going to be a really difficult one for him to keep. And at one point, Tom actually said to me that this is a plus EV bet for him, whether he wins it or not, because he figured that not eating meat and not having enough protein would make Phil Ivey a worse player online. So, you know, there are multi-levels here.
That's true. So either he's going to get paid off a little bit, or he's going to make Phil crazy, and the $1 million will come back to him online. I hear that Phil had a weight loss bet with maybe Gus Hansen or somebody else that he also bought out of in the last few months as well. I was wondering, a prop bet with you, Kara, how much would you need to actually date Norman Chad?
Oh, wow. Oh, just the chance to do that.
Because he kept joking during the coverage last year that you were Kara Scott Chad, his next ex-wife.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that lovely? He's thinking so far ahead.
Yeah. He should be so lucky.
Well, I'm not signing a prenup. I'll tell you that right now.
Are you thinking only ahead to tournaments you're going to play? You mentioned the Irish Open and the main event. Or do you also sit down at Cash Games out in Los Angeles, your new home base?
You know, I haven't sat down out here just because I'm more towards Santa Barbara area, so it's not quite as close as the being able to run back and forth to the casinos easily. But when I'm out in Vegas, I definitely do. I love sitting down in the cash games. And, I mean, I don't play hugely high, but it's just such a lot of fun. And I definitely play online as well, so I'm playing, you know, some cash online, and that's a lot of fun. It kind of mixes it up with the tournaments, but I'm more of a tournament donkey. I know that. I know my game.
When you do play cash, what level do you play?
Playing a lot of, I guess, 2-5, nothing too big.
Mm-hmm. Well, 2-5 can get a little expensive, too, at times. I've seen some of those
games
out there.
I've been very, very lucky, so thankfully.
All right. What else is going on? I mean, you've got such a wide range of things you've done now, you know, poker nightlife, the backgammon game, everything else. What else is in the future? Do we have a Kara Scott movie coming out, or what's going on?
I feel like I don't know. I've had like 16 different lives, it feels like. I'm doing some work with the WPT now as well, which is really nice because I absolutely adore Mike Sexton and Vince Van Patten.
Yeah.
They're such lovely men. And, you know, Mike's such a great ambassador for poker, too. So it was great for the WPT Invitational. I was there doing some of the, you know, the interviews and helping the guys with a little bit of co-hosting. And I'll be going to some other WPTs as well this season, not all of them, but doing a little bit with that. And then I'm heading back to the UK very soon to do a couple of poker TV shows out there. They do The Big Game and the World Women's Open, so I'll be able to kind of go home and see some friends and family and get a bit of work done. So and in between, I'm just basically at home trying to catch up and catch my breath.
Before we let you go, I'm curious about one other thing from High Stakes Poker. We talked before about how they're encouraged to talk at the table. I was surprised this week that Daniel Negreanu, who has had an absolutely horrible run season after season on high-stakes poker, that he was telling people what he had in several hands. In fact, there was one hand where Daniel accidentally turned over the nine of hearts when he was a hand heads up with Ellie and then decided not to bet, and then Daniel caught the miracle gut shot eight on the river, and Ellie checked, and Daniel bet, and Ellie went in the tank and tried to figure out what Daniel had, and eventually he folded. And then a conversation starts at the table between a couple of guys about what Daniel could have had there, and Daniel actually told them what he had or didn't had. Are you surprised that a pro like that is giving away that much information to guys who are that good?
Yeah, sometimes, definitely. I think, you know, he must have sort of reverse reasons for doing that sometimes, because he does seem to be really honest a lot of the time, between hands, sometimes in hands, and I guess it kind of puts you off guard, because the times he's not being honest, it's really hard to figure it out, I suppose. I think he's played with these guys so much as well in live games, like for such a long, long time, that I think there's very little that they don't pick up from each other, and there's so many, like, backhanded reverse tells for this and that and the other thing, and yeah, it gets a little complicated.
What do you think of that, Dennis?
Well, I wondered about it, and Ellie's reaction over there, too, because he was talking about all the hands he could beat and this and that, and back and forth, and I think he was trying to get a read on Daniel.
Yeah.
And then finally said, oh, I lied, and he turned over his cards and showed them.
Yeah.
I think he kind of backed himself in a corner. He didn't want it to be shown on the air that way, so he announced it and turned his cards over on it. Ellie's a great guy. He and Daniel have had some great matches there in Bobby's room and that they've talked about. I've heard him do that. So, I don't think Daniel's giving away a whole lot by showing his cards. A normal player would, but I think Kara kind of hit it right on the head there when she said, these guys know each other well enough, they can put each other on some decent hands in that.
Kara, how well do you know them after watching them for 3 full days, which will get turned into 13 full shows? Do you have a read on any of these players so when you get into the NBC Heads Up next year against some of them, you'll know, oh, I saw him do that on High Stakes Poker?
Oh, yeah, because poker's pretty much an easy game, you know. If you play High Stakes next year, why not? Everyone can do it. Nah, there's no way. I think people watch it, and it looks so much easier when you can see all the cards, and people have a tendency to, like, you know, tear apart a lot of plays online that maybe they couldn't actually even make themselves. It just looks a lot easier than it is. And I have no illusions about where my place is there, and that is in the booth talking to them after they're done.
Well, Kara, we really appreciate your time today. We appreciate you being a good sport after Dennis beat you this weekend to agree to come right on the show with us, and we hope we can do it with you again perhaps this summer out at the series.
I would love that, and, yeah, congratulations on going so deep, Dennis. I was rooting for you. I wished you were going to take it down.
All right, well, I really appreciate that. And don't worry, you get back there next year. I think I'd rather have somebody else in the first round. Your game keeps improving. There's no doubt about
Bless
it.
Bless you. That's nice. Thanks.
All right.
Kara Scott from High Stakes Poker joining us here at the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. We are coming to you live from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis, which just over 3 weeks from now will host its first ever World Series of Poker circuit event. If you want to get into the main event, which will be on April 13th, 14th, and 15th, there are qualifiers going on the next 3 Saturdays, and in fact a couple of Sundays as well. You can go to harrahsstlouis.com and find the full schedule for not only the tournament itself with all the no limit hold'em events and the 7 stud 8 or better in the pot limit Omaha and the limit Omaha age and the horse events and all of the satellites and all the rest, 3 events a day for 2 solid weeks, or come here and qualify the next 3 weekends by playing live in these $120 buy-in noon and 3 p.m. events. It's limited to 100 players total, and the winners will come back and play in the 5K championship event of the World Series of Poker circuit event here in April. If you want the information, again, it's harrahsstlouis.com. That's the home of the final table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips was third in the 2008 World Series of Poker main event and 45th in the 2009 World Series of Poker main event. After those 2 deep runs, what's he going to do this year? Right now, he's talking poker with Paul Harrah's at the final table from Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
We will introduce you to the guys from the 2+2 PokerCast in just a moment. First, another one-on-one interview that the poker coach, Joe McGowan, recorded this weekend at the NBC Heads Up Championship with a guy who hasn't been in a lot of tournaments for the last couple of years. You remember him as the co-host of Celebrity Poker Showdown. Is that what the name of that show was?
Yep.
Yeah. Phil Gordon with the poker coach, Joe McGowan.
Congratulations. You just beat Durr in the Heads Up. Did you feel like you took your first bad beat before the tournament even started when you drew Durr?
Well, I mean, anytime you're playing one of the top 5 players in the world, it's not a good thing for you. Here's a good thing. I really wanted to play him. I have nothing to lose in this match because everyone in the world expected him to win. So I either come out looking like a hero or nothing bad happens, except I lose my 20 grand, and that's not going to kill me. So it was actually a pretty good draw for me from that respect, but the bracket that I drew really sucks. I mean, if you look around, you know, it's Ivy and Negreanu and Mercier, and, you know, it's just chock full of unbelievably talented pros. It's going to be really tough to advance through this bracket, but, you know, beating Durr gives me a lot of confidence, and, you know, I'm looking forward to my next match, whoever it is.
Did you have a strategy going in?
Yes, 100% okay. I did, and I've You know, I vetted it with a few of my close poker friends, and the strategy worked absolutely perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. I got off to a quick lead, to a quick chip lead. I played big pots, which I needed to do against him because he's so good after the flop.
A little scary to do that sometimes. You know, I'm a poker player, and you know, when you're forced to play that way,
here's the thing.
It's a little
scary. If I play small ball with him, he's going to destroy me.
Right, right.
So, and I know that. So my only hope is to play big
right.
pots.
And you look for coin flips if you could.
And that's exactly what happened. Okay. So I got off to a quick lead, and I looked for a coin flip, and I found it, you know, and I got lucky and won the pot.
How did that hand go? Do you remember?
Yeah. So he raised on the button to, like, 1,100. I made it 4,000. Basically, he had 16,000, so he had, in order to re-raise me, he has to push in.
Okay.
That's the only thing that can happen there.
Okay.
And he pushed in, and I called.
Like, oh, perfect.
So that's exactly what I wanted to have happen. And
of course, you know, it never goes down without a sweat. I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah.
He ends up flopping. You know, he can hit the ace, the queen,
or the
jack, because
yeah.
it came queen 10. So
well,
you got a little sweat there.
At this point, it didn't really matter what happened because I'd accomplished what I needed to accomplish. I got all my money in
right.
with the best hand. You know, granted, it's about 50-50, but I have the chip lead. I've got the best hand. My money's in against dirt. That's all I want.
When you had the poker TV show,
yeah.
Celebrity Poker, hugely successful.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
But then you left the show and someone else took
yeah,
over.
Phil
and
Holmes,
what happened?
Yeah. The ratings dropped by about 80%. Yeah.
Why am I laughing so hard? You know, I shouldn't do that. I'm a bad person here.
I don't think it was all Phil Helmy's fault. You know, they moved the show to New Orleans, which has a much different vibe than Las Vegas. The celebrities that they booked for that season with Phil weren't quite as popular as the celebrities that I had booked.
You're not supposed to be this nice to, you know, Phil Helmy.
And Phil just, I don't know, I don't think he fit the vibe of the show. And, I was really sad to leave the show. It was easily the most fun I've ever had. And, you know, I love Dave Foley like a brother. I just talked to him a couple of days ago. He's doing great. I would love to do something else in the world of poker broadcasting, but so far, no one's come knocking. So.
Well, they probably will. I mean, you knocked it out on that show, and I think everybody loved you in that, to be honest.
As Phil Gordon with Joe the Poker Coach McGowan this weekend after he beat Tom Dwan in round one of the NBC Heads Up. Phil then went on to lose to another Phil Locke, who went on to lose to Jason Mercier, who went on to lose to Scotty Wynn, who went on to lose to Annie Duke, who went on to beat Dennis in the semifinals this weekend. We'll try to squeeze in another one-on-one with the poker coach before the end of the hour if we have time. If not, we'll try to get to some of those on next week's show and maybe play some of them for you when the NBC Heads Up actually airs in April. Our next guests are Mike Johnson and Adam Schwartz. They are the co-hosts of the 2+2 PokerCast, a very entertaining PokerCast, which they started as a terrestrial radio show 5 years ago, now one of the most listened to poker podcasts online. They do the show in Vancouver, but like us, they travel to tournaments all over the world, from the World Series of Poker to the Aussie Millions in Melbourne. And, of course, they were back home in Vancouver with Winter Olympics excitement a couple of weeks ago. Mike and Adam, welcome to the final table. Have you stopped singing O Canada yet?
I don't know. Adam, do you get to make the Davis Backus and Eric Johnson jokes, or should I take care of that?
Oh, right. This is in St. Louis. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's continue with the bashing.
How are those silver medals looking down there?
They're looking just fine. Thanks
they
for
are.
Asking.
No problem.
Good.
What happened in the first match with Canada and U.S.? Anybody forget that?
Oh,
never mind. Go ahead.
You guys, you know, only the final matter, table matters. It's the name of your show.
Guys, it's a pleasure having you on. I enjoy listening to the PokerCast, and I know Dennis has been on there a couple of times. We actually have a couple of things we want to ask you about the NBC Heads Up, because I know you talked about it as a preview on your show last week, about people who should and shouldn't have been there, including Phil Gordon, who you felt shouldn't have even been invited. Why? Mike?
Oh, just simply his accomplishments, his resume is not comparative to so many other people that could. I mean, there are so many, when you're doing a made-for-TV event, there are so many criteria that goes into that. Obviously, we know there are people that make great television that don't have the huge resumes. We had a guy on our program last week, Phil Locke, who would fall into that category. Hasn't won a ton lately, but you know you're going to get good TV out of him. And I just don't know of all the different categories that you would choose to pick somebody from that Phil falls under any of those categories, other than the fact that he's a a member of Team Full Tilt, and if he wasn't chosen, he'd be the only person on Team Full Tilt that wasn't invited to the tournament. So I'm guessing that's why he ended up getting picked.
Well, I kind of question it. I had such a kick. I was talking to Doyle when we got there. When there's down to only six of us left, Jason had already lost and Peter Eastgate had lost. Doyle looked at me and says, you know, Annie's the youngest one left, and he kind of grinned at me.
That's right. Of the final six, everybody was over 40.
Yep, yep. You know, the gray hairs unite. Here we go.
And Adam, you guys, you know, with the 2+2 forum, you know, you've got that kind of young gun attitude going on there. What do you think of the gray hairs taking down the NBC heads up?
You know, I thought it was awesome, and especially Dennis's run. It was great to see. But, yeah, you know, you're right. Over a 2+2, it's you know, which 20-year-old are we going to interview this week? And it's because it's a collection of kids who will jump up and down and say that internet poker wizards are the best in the game. And it was neat to see something like that happen, especially with Dennis and Doyle and some of the others that went deep. It was a lot of fun.
Doyle was smiling as he was saying it, but there was a twinkle in his eye, I'll tell you that. I don't know what the average age was there with the six of us. In fact, I don't even want to go there. But, yeah, it was kind of neat.
Mike, I'm curious about your poker history. I know Adam plays a lot and enters a lot of tournaments. Are you a tournament guy, a cash game guy? What do you do?
I do about 50-50. I play, I mean, compared to the people we talk to every week, very low-stakes cash games. I play kind of 2-5. No limit, and then tournaments. I'll play in the PokerStars Sunday Million, which is a tournament Dennis is familiar with, and you know, it's one of the bigger online tournaments. That's probably my level, and at the World Series of Poker, I'll maybe enter one or two of the preliminary events, which are $1,500 buy-ins. But that's about my cap. I try to keep the losses to a minimum for sure.
Adam, what about you?
I've been playing a long time. I kind of stumbled into poker in about 1995, and you know, obviously they didn't have the tournament sizes that they have now, but I was mostly a cash game player, and I dabbled in the odd tournament here and there. I don't, tournaments sort of drive me crazy, and in that, you know, every day you might fail 8 days in a row and then, you know, have a good day and make that eight back, and I just couldn't stand the 8 days in a row walking down the hallway wondering why I was doing this. So
yeah, well,
I
was going to say, I think you're like me, a cash game player who, if you go 10 hours and make no money, that's a lost day. Tournament players, they go, well, you know, that's the job.
Yeah, exactly. It's frustrating, and I have a lot of respect for guys who can do that, you know, year after year. You look at a guy like Chris Ferguson or some of the younger tournament guys that can just go and play tournaments every day and, you know, get their head beat against a wall time after time after time and keep on coming back. I just don't have the heart to do that. I need to play in a cash game. I need to have sort of more instant results, and I can track it a little better, and I just don't feel like variance is going to kill me, and that's the feeling I get with tournaments.
Well, they're talking about tournaments. St. Louis is going to host its first ever WSOP circuit event here in just a couple of weeks. You guys, this is a massive site. If you guys haven't gone to 2+2, if anybody listening here, they should. I think you got 20 million posts on there now. You've got strategy galore. What? Two things for it. First of all, what can you give as hints for somebody coming in and playing in their first major event? And second of all, are there any books you can recommend, anything like that, that you want to would promote here for the person that's moving up from that you know, $100, $200 tournament, suddenly playing a 5K tournament or even the 500s and 1,000s they have here?
Well,
as far as 2+2, for those who don't know, before it became the biggest poker forum and the radio show and all of the sort of interactive stuff, is a book publisher, and the most popular tournament book and probably the most well-reviewed tournament book is the Dan Harrington series, and that is published by 2+2, and they're it's called Harrington on Hold'em, and if you haven't got your hands on those books and you want to do well at tournaments, they have stood the test of time. There are other tournament-related books, but those would, without question, be the two books that I would recommend for tournament players. Harrington on Hold'em 1 and 2, and they're both published by our company.
Yeah, and as far as tournaments, you know, playing in your first big tournament, I think, you know, you've got to be able to sit down if you're a tournament player and sort of disassociate yourself with the size of the buy-in. So if Dennis, you're saying it's their first event, and or maybe their first big event, that they're playing in, it's not going to play a whole lot different than their $50 buy-in. You know, you'll have different colored chips maybe, but the players are generally going to be the same if you're in the same area. And, you know, just treat it like it's another $50 event, because if you play scared money, of course, you're never going to win.
Yeah, by the way, I wish you, Mike, would stop encouraging people to read the Harrington Cash Games book.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
When I read it, I thought, oh, I hope nobody ever finds out about this book. Maybe I should buy every copy. It's just too damn good. One thing I want to do with you guys here, we only have a few more minutes to go, but I want to play for you a one-on-one interview that Joe McGowan did with Annette Oberstad, who won the WSOP Europe last year, was the head of the European Caesars Cup team that was on TV on ESPN just a couple of weeks ago, and she has some very interesting things to say about her as an online player playing in a live setting like at the NBC Heads Up. So let's play that, and we'll get your reaction to it. Roll it, Brad.
Like a phenom in poker. Congratulations with that. Do you feel a little more pressure because you're kind of that young gun type of deal and you come into this tournament and it's televised and people feel like you should win and she's the one to watch? I mean, does that put extra pressure on you when you play?
I guess it does in a way, but I can't really do anything about it because, you know, I play my game, and if that's not good enough, then I'm not going to win. And that's just the way it is. But, yeah, it would be awesome if I did win because then I would live up to everybody's expectations and all that. But, you know, just going to see what happens.
Now, when you play and you're sitting across the person at the other side of the table and you're playing heads up, are you worried in any way of what physical tells you might give as opposed to so much experience and time online when you're home and you can be hanging out and just relaxed and you get aces? I know I jump out of my chair and prop up, I'm ready to go. But here you can't do that. So, I mean, is there stuff that you think of with that or you try to pay attention?
No, actually, I just try to, you know, hide anything from myself because I'm not good at picking up tells from other people. So I just make sure that, you know, I don't have any tells and then they can't read me. And that's really all I can do. I just sit there, put my sunglasses on, and just do the same thing every hand,
now,
pretty much.
Do you feel then sometimes they might give reverse tells, or they may try to?
Well, see, the thing is, like, I'm not good at picking that up. So even if they are, I'm probably not going to follow it because I've done that so many times before. I've thought that something meant that they're weak or whatever, and then it turns out they're strong, you know, just because they're taking a sip of their water, you know, doesn't mean anything. Maybe they're just thirsty because that's what people do when they're thirsty. So, you know, I just try to ignore all that and just go with what I think they have.
Okay, right on. I like that. So in a way, what you're telling me, I believe, is you make it as if you're playing online and go with the
sort of,
kind of just disconnect from what you see, unless it's real obvious, and I'm sure there's some stuff that you...
Yeah, no, definitely, but in a field like this, people are going to be so good that I don't think anybody has really obvious tells anyway.
That's Annette Oberstad, Annette 15, talking to the poker coach Joe McGowan this weekend, and we're talking with Mike Johnson and Adam Schwartz from the 2+2 PokerCast. Adam, your reaction to Annette not knowing anything about tells at the table. Are you surprised?
No, not surprised at all. She doesn't have a ton of experience with live poker, you know, when you talk about guys in that field like Doyle or Daniel or Scotty or whoever. She has honed her game online and, you know, is definitely one of the young guns of poker, but she doesn't have a ton of live experience, so she's not going to be able to pick up those tells before and how to interpret them and all that kind of stuff. And again, she pointed out, you're playing against some of the best players in the world, so, you know, you've got reverse tells and all of the other stuff. But she really does do a good job of keeping her tells, or at least trying to, you know, remain stoic and do the same thing hand after hand. We were just in Australia and saw her play at the final table, and I've seen her play before, and she's really quite good at doing the same thing over and over again. And that's a good tip for people out there who aren't experienced, you know, to be able to pick up tells is to not give off any, and that's key too.
Yeah, but that's only half the battle. There's such a high quality of play going on here. I mean, you're talking about just small percentages. If you can pick up, if you don't have any developed picking up of tells right now, you need to work on it. If there's 10 different categories of poker, you know, tells being one of them, and you ignore that, you're giving your opponent an advantage, I would think. I mean, I work hard at trying to pick up tells on people. You know, Chris Ferguson is almost impossible to read. Everybody knows that. But I'm telling you, there's a lot of other pros, a lot of other well-known pros that do have tells.
Mike,
sure,
what do you think?
I think, Yeah, I think you're right. I think that you need experience, I think. And that just really doesn't have the hours in a poker room that a lot of the people do. But you're right. You definitely need to work on that. And there's really only one way to find out. Like she says, if somebody's sipping a glass of water, might be that they're thirsty. You're going to have to find out by accident sometimes just, you know, what is a tell and what isn't a tell.
You know what, I think Annette was being a little bit coy in that interview, too. She gets, for a person that's only been, she hasn't even played in her first World Series of Poker in Las Vegas yet, she wins the World Series Europe at 18 years old. All eyes are on her. Female poker players get criticized more than anybody else. I'm a huge fan of Annette, and I think because of the fact that she gets a lot of criticism for being cocky and thinking she's the best because she's had a lot of success at the young age, now that she does these interviews, she tries to not come off in interviews as being a know-it-all. So I think she was probably being a little bit coy because in her 3 years since she's been able to play live in Europe, she has played quite a bit.
Well, let me tell you something. At her age, there's no way in the world I could be playing at the level she is. So I have all the respect in the world on that. And I'm scared to see what she's going to be like in about 5 or 6 years.
You know what? Whenever I see any of these young players who are phenoms now in their late teens and early 20s, I want to see what they all look like in 20 years. You know? That'll be the real test for me of whether they become poker phenoms or poker veterans. Mike Johnson and Adam Schwartz, the co-hosts of the 2 Plus 2 PokerCast, which you can find at 2plus2.com, and you can find them on the forums there as well. Guys, I'm entertained by your show, and I appreciate you coming on our show today.